It is July 22nd, 2019. This is episode 3 of Richardel Talk. I'm your host, David Newton. I'm really excited about this episode. It's been a while coming, but this is our first interview episode of Richardel Talk. Today, I got the chance to talk with Larry Oberto about the Oberto sponsorship and Oberto legacy in hydroplane racing. We're also going to talk a little bit about the test session that happened last Thursday. They had the new Oberto hydroplane out there with Jeff Bernard driving, and they had the vintage Oberto hydroplane. It was a fun day out there, the test session. So we'll talk a little bit more about that and our interview with Larry Oberto. So sit back, relax, and welcome to Richardel Talk. I'm very excited about this episode. This is our first interview episode. I got the chance to go down to Hydroplanes Inc., the old Bud shop, which is now the Home Street shop, and talk a little bit with Larry Oberto. We got to talk a little bit about his passion of hydroplanes, the legacy of Oberto's, and a little bit about the future of hydroplanes and Oberto. Really excited about that interview. But before we get there, I want to talk a little bit about last Thursday. And last Thursday, Lake Washington, Seattle fans, hydroplane fans, were treated to a test session on Lake Washington down at the Stansears Pits. This was the first test session we've had in Seattle for many years. I've talked to a few different people, well, many different people, about the test sessions that were there and some who weren't. And we can't remember the last time there was a test session on Lake Washington. So that's a challenge for the viewers out there, or the listeners out there, to email in or to message me. And if you know the last test session that was on Lake Washington, I want to know about it. Because I know it's been a pretty long gap since there has been a test session at Stansears Pits. I know recent years, many teams have gone over the Tri-Cities in the early spring. And they've had a spring event, H1 has, so many teams have gone out there in April, or early April, to test. And I know there's logistics. I think it's more open to go over Tri-Cities. There's a little bit more freedom. It's just harder to do in Seattle, but the Seattle fans were treated last week. They had two boats out there. They had the new Oberto, which is not so new Oberto. It was built in 2007. That's Home Street's backup boat now. But they had it repainted and had brand new graphics on there. I got to say, it looked pretty slick out there. It had the red and green chrome wrap on there. Big Oberto name on both sides and all over the boat. I don't know how many times the Oberto's name is on there, but it's on there quite a few. You can't miss it. But they were able to christen that. Jeff Bernard christened it in the water. He had a big piece of salami he whacked the wing with before taking it out for the first test run. Before we go any further on the test session, I recorded the boat going out on the course, spooling up its engine as it got on plane. So let's take a listen on that.
Closed.
Here goes the Oberto. Well, you gotta love that sound if you're a hydroplane race fan. I'm sure it gave a few of you out there some goosebumps. But anyways, the boat got out on the course and did a few laps. Looked like a kind of a shakedown run, but the boat looks beautiful out in the water. I know a lot of people got some great pictures of it out there. And they didn't have a lot of time for the test session. City of Seattle restricts how long They allow the window to be open for the hydroplanes on the water. I believe it was only from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And you could say, well, that's 3 hours of time that they can run, but it takes a lot to get the boat out there and to do a lot of runs. So it was only able to do 2 runs. But the second run, they were able to get it out on the water. They did a couple hot laps out there. And I believe Jeff Bernard said he got it up to 185 or 190 miles per hour. So he stepped on it a little bit out there. But they also got the vintage Oberto out there. They were able to get the boats side by side for a couple laps. And there was some great aerial footage of that run. I believe it was Cairo or Como, a local news station, had a helicopter out there. And they got footage of both boats running at the same time, which was pretty cool to watch. And I know there was a lot of photographers out there. I know I saw Jim Clark out there and Chris Denslow. And they took some phenomenal pictures of the boats right next to each other. So if you are friends with Jim Clark or Chris Denslow on Facebook, you can see some of their pictures that they had. Just some really stunning pictures of both boats together, which has never happened before. And I know there's only been a few boats out there that they've had kind of a modern and vintage version of out there. I remember in 2003 or 2004 when Bernie passed away in Tri-Cities, they had the current Budweiser at that time. It was T6. And they had the Griffin Budweiser. And I believe they had the Round Nose Budweiser out there as well. And they all three performed kind of a tribute lap to Bernie. But I don't know if they've ever had another boat out there, a current hydroplane out there with a vintage boat. So that was another treat for the Seattle fans to see that happen. Now, with the vintage Oberto boat, they didn't have the exact Drop Swanson 75 version that the museum has restored. They put a wrap over the Miss Burien to make it look like that version. I'm not sure why they did that. I figured the other version probably wasn't ready to run, so they put some stickers on the Burien to get it out there and make it happen. But it looked great. The vinyl graphics that they use nowadays, they look really sharp. So I know some models out there probably want to build a few models of that now. But it looked good out there. I liked it. It was cool. And then Oberto, it was first class event for everyone there. There was quite a few hundred people there in attendance. Oberto provided lunch with some hot links, hot dogs, chips and whatnot. And they actually had a prize wheel out there. So I know a lot of people left with some shirts and goodies and bags and jerky. So that was a fun day, and it was great to see all the fans embrace it. Like I said, there was a few hundred people there at least. Some of the pictures I've looked through almost looks like I'm looking at pictures of Seafair, because there's so many people in between me and the boats. So great event. Glad that happened. I'm hopefully that next year Seattle can see another hydroplane test session happen at Lake Washington, because I think that's another way to give buzz and promote the sport in the city itself. When Seattle only sees the boats come out once a year, I can see them losing some of the fan base with that. I think getting more exposure to the boats really will help the fan base and help the fans continue their love of the sport. Well, I want to talk a little bit about Larry Oberto. I got the chance to meet him down at the test session on Thursday. Super nice guy, all about promoting hydroplanes, racing, and Oberto products. He and his family have really been a big influence on the sport. They've had sponsored a boat on and off since 1975. So they've been really heavy into the sport for 44 years. So have been a really big part of hydroplane racing. They're natives of the Seattle area, lived here for a long, long time. And Larry and his father have put a lot of energy into promoting and helping hydroplanes around the area for all those years. So I was really excited to get the opportunity to talk with Larry a little bit more and find out a little bit more about about their passion, about their involvement with the sport. I had to jump at the opportunity to talk with them at the Home Street Bank hydroplane shop. And keep in mind, we got to do this in the office, but it's still a shop. So you could still, you could hear every once in a while. I think Mike Hansen was in the back room working, and Jeff Bernard, they're working on getting the boat ready for Tri-Cities, which is days away. So every once in a while, you might hear a tool drop or them working on something with the boat. So let's listen in on my interview with Larry Oberto. All right, well, I'm here at the Home Street Shop in Tukwila, Washington with Larry Oberto today. Welcome, Larry. It's good to have you on.
Good to be here, man. I'm kind of excited to be involved with the podcast. Sounds like a fantastic project.
Well, thank you very much. And you got the honor of being our first interview on the podcast of Richtel Talk.
Well, that means either I'll leave everyone hanging waiting for the next, or it's going to have to pay people to listen further.
Well, time will tell, right, Larry?
Hopefully I can live up to your expectations.
Well, we really appreciate having you on here. I think this is going to be a lot of fun for the fans. Well, last Thursday, the Oberto boat was down at Lake Washington for a test session, and from a fan perspective, it was a fantastic event. There was a lot of people down there. I think it was well promoted. Oberto had their new boat out there, the Home Street's backup boat. They were able to do a few runs. They had the vintage boat, Oberto was there, and the company came down and gave lunch to all the fans. I know I had a hot link. It was very tasty.
That's good to hear, because that's how we're going to keep funding the boat.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, it was very good. And they also had some prizes they gave away. I saw a lot of fans walk away with some bags and some other memorabilia, some shirts and whatnot. So at least from the fans' perspective, I think it was a well-run event. But I want to know about the Oberto company. How did they feel the test session went?
The response I've got has been pretty positive, and I can say the reason the marketing department really put a lot into it to do all the giveaways and the sausage, and they were pretty excited, and that took a lot of their own personal effort over and above all their normal workload, and that shows they're supporting the sport and all the fans because they know they're out there. My nephew's the VP of marketing. He wanted to know if we can wrap the vintage boat in chrome next year. So that's a positive sign.
Yeah, yeah.
The president, CEO, Tom Hernquist, he just said, wow, it's beautiful.
That's great to
hear. You know, and he truly is my toughest critic. And the person I have to answer to is him and my nephew, of all people.
Well, I'm glad to hear that they're happy, though. It seemed like there was a lot of people out there. Did you ever get a count? How many people showed up?
Didn't get a count, but for 12 years, I've wanted to run the old boat and new boat, and something always got in the way.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
And I didn't actually think it would ever happen now that I'm less involved with helping promote and do this sport. And I didn't know how many fans would show up. It's like, okay, are there people out there that still love hydros, or will the pits be empty? And if it's empty, I guess we have our answer about what to do next year.
Right.
And it was old school Seattle. Mm-hmm. I saw people I knew in high school, old people from Garfield. There were people that came out in their cars and just cranked tunes and hung out in the park and just made a picnic of it.
Right.
It was a really positive response. Yeah. Seattle still loves hydroplanes. Oh, yeah.
And I saw quite a few families there, too. I saw some kids running around and some families there. So that was really great.
That's what Seattle's all about. That's what boat racing's about, and Seafair. It's about engaging with and entertaining the kids and in a safe place where they can have some fun and learn something new.
Yeah. Well, excellent. I'm glad to hear that Oberto was happy with that and went well in that sense. But how about the team? They only got to run twice on Thursday. How did they feel the boat performed? Were they able to try some things out, or was it more of just a shakedown before Tri-Cities?
There's two things. First was to corporately just relaunch the Oberto brand and the fact we're making all the like really good old specialty meats, the things I grew up on. So I'm excited about that. Nice. And then, like I said, to run the two boats together, which was my own kind of dream. And then the team, from the team standpoint, it was a lot of extra work. A lot of extra work. And my hats go off to Mike and Larry Hansen and the other people that dove in to get the boat prepared and down there on time.
Right.
Because we were really shorthanded. So the main objective from a team standpoint is to just get Jeff out in the boat, get him a little more comfortable, so that when he goes to Tri-Cities and he gets in the boat, it's not the first time. Mm-hmm. Because from a driver's standpoint, your brain will analyze those data points from the time he ran on Thursday to when he gets in the boat again on Friday. And that'll make him more comfortable, a better driver. It'll help us design a seat for him because he now knows what was in the way, not in the way. So it'll really help us be more efficient and effective in Tri-Cities.
Yeah.
And safer.
And safer. That's great to hear. That's great to hear. All right. Well, being down there on Thursday at the test session, I talked to many people, and I had a really hard time remembering the last time that we saw a hydroplane test on Lake Washington. I think it's been a number of years that that's happened. I know many teams have gone over to Tri-Cities, especially with the spring test event that they have, where many boats go over there in April and test. So I'm wondering how much effort does it take for a test session to occur, especially on that type of caliber that we saw on Thursday? How many volunteers were needed? What was the red tape you had to go through?
Wow. there, when I looked around at all the people and the patrol boats and the divers and the crane operator and the crews and the Oberto marketing people, I easily guessed if I added the people behind the scenes that work for the Parks Department, the city, people in the Coast Guard, everybody that worked, I'll bet you it took 100 people.
Wow.
Easily.
Wow.
Easily, I'll bet you there were 100 people combined there and behind the scenes to pull this off. It was a big deal. And really, the person that gets 100% of the kudos for me is David Williams at the museum.
Yeah.
When we thought of doing this, I knew David and the museum was the only person that knew how the gears all connected to get it done.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that my hat's off to completely, as well as, you know, the team that then got the boat done to get there.
Right.
But that combination was it was a beautiful thing to watch. Because, you know, David was doing his thing. Marketing is marketing. They're not racers, right? You had all these loose ends. And I just kept looking at everyone and I said, we're tying together all these strings in this wonderful knot. Mm-hmm. And they're all going to show up with their piece of string on Thursday morning. And then we're going to see if it works. And if any one thing doesn't happen, this whole thing might not go off.
Right. Yeah.
And it worked. Yeah. It truly, yeah, I got goosebumps just, I can't believe it made me very proud of everybody.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think you should be very proud. It was a great day, for hydroplanes in Seattle. And I think a lot of people from Seattle have missed, seeing that in the last few years. Because the only other chance they've had is at Seafair time, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the, you know, I don't know if it was David Williams in the Lake Ridge paving or one of Fred's boats that was, but maybe 10 plus years
it's been. Yeah, so it's been about a decade since we've had a test session there.
Yeah. So I thank the rowing club and the Parks Department too. Be nice to those guys, everybody. Send them thank you letters.
Yes. Yes, please do. All right, well, I hope you're happy with that. It definitely went well. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your history with your family in hydroplane racing. You definitely have deep roots in the Seattle community in hydroplane racing, but if you could give us the listeners out there a rundown of how you and your father got involved with the sport and really made the Oberto name a legacy in hydroplane racing.
Again, my old man could talk an hour on all that, but if I condense it all, the house I grew up in, my father purchased specifically because it had a view of the races. Okay.
Wow.
Yes. So he moved out of his mother's basement with two kids and one on the way and bought a house so he could watch the races.
Wow.
And then during the big financial crisis at the end of 73, mm-hmm. In 74, they had that telethon to raise money. And during that, my dad would go out after work every day, and he would go to knocking on doors in Seattle and get people to sign a thing that says, are you for or against the hydros? Because mm-hmm. there was some doctor, whatever, that lived on the edge that was like saying he spoke for the neighborhood and didn't want it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he got so many signatures to prove that this guy really didn't represent the neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's how much my dad loves boat racing.
Wow.
So at the telethon, Bill Wooster looked at him and said, I think he was driving for, who was it, Bob Murphy?
Bob Gilliam?
Bob Gilliam, yeah. And Bill Wooster said, like, hey, well, Arthur, you should sponsor a boat. And my dad's like, all right, well, I pay seafare for passes for the kids. We'll sponsor a boat, and we'll take the neighborhood kids down, and now we'll all hang out at the boat. And that's how it started. Okay. And the contract was basically, if it qualified, you got paid. And every heat it ran, it got paid. The boat never runs, so nobody got paid. it was the most economic. And the fact that the boat never ran, it became a legend unto itself of the little train that tried to at least go, you know?
Yeah.
So that's how it started.
Okay.
And my dad just likes it for a gimmick and be out there, and I don't like to do it unless we compete. So that's why we've been competing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you've definitely stepped up in the past few years and been the top performer out there.
Yeah, it's been a good run. It's a, great run.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. All right. Well, I want to talk about your personal life in racing. I was wondering if you have raced in any hydro classes before, and what other type of racing you've been involved in.
Yeah. I raced C stock, D stock, 25. I was 17 and lied and said I was 18, so my mom would have to sign the waiver. And my first race was at Henley Resort.
Okay.
I bought a old Carrollson round front C hydro from Mike Jones.
Okay.
And an old Mercury Mark 30H. And so I raced that for 2 years, and then I went and bought some fast equipment. And man, that was fun. So I raced that. Before that, I ski raced in high school, mm-hmm. which no offense to motorsports people, but ski racing still, to me, is the ultimate sport.
Yeah.
There's nothing like...
That's another level right there.
There's nothing like mapping out a course that you're not sure what it'll be like when you go down because of the people went before you, mm-hmm. and then kind of maximizing and analyzing physics.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, so ski racing, then boat racing. Then my brother and I'd been boat racing, 15 years? And Owen Blauman, friend, was working down at Bondurant, mm-hmm. and said, like, hey, come on down and go to a driving class. And I'm like, all right, why not? So I went down and took a driving class. And had fun, and everyone's like, dude, you should do that. All the instructors, and I'm like, my mom's going, yeah, of course they tell you that. That's what they're supposed to tell you.
Yeah, they're trying to sell it to
you. They're trying to sell it to you, right? Yeah. And then you'll get a car and hire them to do stuff. So 2 years later, I bought a old RF32 Crosley, raced Club Ford in the International Race Drivers Club, and I picked the class because it had a lot of really talented people, old-timers that knew all the tracks and did it a long time. Mm-hmm. And then quickly, you know, if you can do it. And then I just started setting goals every 3 years, you know, like, oh, maybe in 3 years this will happen. Mm-hmm. And every 2 years, the goal happened, like magic. Okay. Like you just attract the right mm-hmm. people at the right time.
Yeah.
So I went from that to a winged car, and I raced the USF 2000 Pro Series with Sam Hornish and Dan Weldon and those guys.
Oh, wow.
And they were younger. Mm-hmm. Even raced with, God, who was the... Greg LeMond was racing USF 2000.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Greg, wherever you are, Greg, I've never seen anybody. Every time he went out, it was 10 tenths. Like, really? Never did I. He was always at the limit. Like, I don't know what cycling's like.
Yeah.
But when he got into the race car, 10 tenths.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I did that, and then I got involved in sports cars and raced here and got a Grand Am championship, and then got picked up by a Swedish team. Mm-hmm. And then I went over to Europe and raced for Stanley Dickens, who won Le Mans with Mercedes in 84 in the Group C mm-hmm. prototypes. And so it was an all-Swedish team, and got to go do the 24-hour Daytona, and then they hired me to go live and work in Europe.
Yeah.
So I raced for an all-Swedish team. Great people.
Yeah.
I love the Swedes, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I raced over there 2 years.
Wow.
Won the championship and got to go to Monte Carlo with Michael Schumacher and stand on the stage with the Prince, Michael Schumacher, yeah. and Bernie Ecclestone. And
well, that's a huge honor itself right there.
I'm the first American FIA champion since Mario Andretti. One F1.
Yeah.
Which to me, I didn't really, because it's a job. It was a job.
Right.
And the farther I get away from that, I'm like, wow.
Yeah, you realize more and more how important that was, how big that was.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people, I'd come back to the States, people would be congratulating me and be like, okay, what's next? It was special. So now it's, how do I take all the accumulation of knowledge in all those different disciplines, mm-hmm. along with the business background of growing a family business, right?
Right.
And how do I help other teams mm-hmm. be more efficient, effective, help raise capital to get it done? I shouldn't say it. My wife would get mad at me, but they kind of call me the meddling sponsor.
Yeah. Well, the sport needs that. We need you for that. So we appreciate you being so meddling.
Yeah. It is a delicate balance. If you look around at anything, motorsports, mm-hmm. Even ball sports, but probably if you look at the NBA's classic for it, if mm-hmm. you're any NBA guys, it's mm-hmm. A general manager, an owner, right, a sponsor can really either contribute or disrupt mm-hmm. any productivity.
Right.
And it's a difficult balance. I'm always like, because you're in it, so you don't have that reflection, mm-hmm. you know, but it's, sometimes you got to know where and when to push before you get anarchy and a bunch of pirates walking off the ship, throwing me off the end.
Well, right now I think you're pushing all the right buttons, so keep on pushing.
As long as I attract the right people, then it's good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how to hire and fire people. I just come up with crazy ideas and some people want to jump on board and that's when it works.
All right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I don't, I'm like, the, last year, you know, we sponsored Charlie Wiggins, right?
Right, right.
And that really stopped people.
Yeah.
It was actually fun. Yeah. I like being a little bit of a rebel and disrupt.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I think I upset a lot of people.
Really?
Because I don't know. I guess they were wondering, because I kept having people come up to me and go, why'd you do it?
Yeah.
And I did it because here's a guy that bought some equipment that was just looking for a way to go racing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I like him as a person.
Yeah.
He's been around boat racing, him and his father, they know their stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I think transitioning to the bigger boats are a different animal, mm-hmm. and you can't learn unless you run.
Right.
And I just figured it'd be fun. Yeah. No pressure.
Yeah.
And then he brought Dave Vilwalk in.
Yes.
And I was thinking, I actually was like, in my brain, I had this kind of, you know, I'm the marionettes putting it together, and I'm thinking team dynamics.
Yeah.
Because I'd worked on different teams, and they function differently.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, Dave's going to bring a different team dynamic. Mm-hmm. And Dave's going to want to go his direction. I'm going to want to go my direction.
Yeah.
And so I was like, uh-oh. Skip forward. Working with Dave was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
We quickly, we let the race team and race setup take its own course. Mm-hmm. Dave knows setup.
Oh, yeah.
So he did that. And then we both really found, I think, kinship in understanding what successful teams look like.
Wow.
Because he's had his success his way on different teams, right?
Right.
The American Spirit, mm-hmm. the Budweiser, mm-hmm. they function differently. Mm-hmm. And myself with the running for Archangel mm-hmm. in the prototype car in the U.S. and mm-hmm. winning, the culture and even the car setup was completely different than Europe. Mm-hmm. Like they were sprung different, they drove different, exact same factory, exact same car.
Yeah.
Right? Both championship, both function, personality, everything differently. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoyed working with Dave on just that whole aspect psychologically of looking around, okay, what about this? How do we get this? You know, it was working with Wiggins and Dave and myself was one of the most enjoyable years, which may not seem that way, but.
Well, that sounds like an amazing year. I mean, Dave's a wealth of knowledge, right? And on boat setups, and it really does take a lot for the dynamics of a crew to mesh together. So that's really a fun story to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. And it's too bad that Charlie, his boat's not here this year, and hopefully he'll make a return next year.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully maybe. This year you kind of have it's going to be interesting to see because I'm putting together different modes of operation and personalities. Mm-hmm. So I've got, Charlie Wiggins, and I wanted to bring three people from that Alabama team, but we're going to bring two. So if Charlie and somebody else, we're going to have Larry Hansen working. You know, there's nobody better than Larry as far as running the boat itself. Mm-hmm. Like we never had a mechanical in 13 years with Madison?
Right. Yeah, that's a fantastic stat right there.
Yeah.
That's kind of mind-boggling to think about.
Yeah. So, you know, and if Larry doesn't do anything but stand and point to people to make sure they tighten stuff right?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he'll work his butt off, but...
Yeah.
And then he'll tell me about it. So Charlie's gonna be, you know, helping manage the team.
Okay.
And me and Larry... And we got some people back from what we had back in Madison.
Okay.
And then Jeff is going to be a great addition.
Oh, yes, definitely.
You know, we'll see. We've got some volatility.
Yeah.
We've got some, we're all got some quirky personalities, and there's some volatility in it. We'll see how it goes.
All right. So is Larry the official crew chief for this
boat?
We
don't really have an official crew chief. We're, you know, I mean, do we, titles are so meaningless.
True.
I mean, they are. People want titles.
Right.
You know, whether Charlie Wiggins is the crew chief from working on the computers and working in the back of the truck, helping him make decisions mm-hmm. on team strategies with Mike Hansen and Jeff and everybody else, mm-hmm. or you say Larry's the crew chief because he's, you know, making sure everything's on the boat right and everything else,
yeah.
it's not really relevant. And
right.
In working with both those people, I really don't think they care. They just want the team to function right and get results and not hurt equipment.
Yeah. Well, that's the right mindset to have.
Yeah.
Right? It takes a village. It's not just one person. It takes a whole village to get the operations working.
Yeah. And everything's going to go wrong. It's what people don't understand, it's managing defined assets in money, people, and hardware, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And combining them with the risk assessment of how you're going to run at any given time and minimizing self-induced errors.
Mm-hmm.
The self-induced, everybody's going to make errors. The person that makes the least errors wins
mm-hmm.
more than not over time.
Right.
And this is what most teams don't understand. Why? Because they're racing to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very expensive approach.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very.
Very, yes. Especially in unlimiteds, right?
In anything.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're racing a soapbox derby.
Yeah.
Look, when you make mistakes, you wreck equipment
mm-hmm.
that takes money you don't have or you want to do something else with.
Mm-hmm.
When you make mistakes, you end up with accidents because of a failure, a mechanical failure. There's nothing, the protecting the driver is first importance above all else.
Yes.
And to do that, again, self-induced errors.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at any motorsport and everything else, the people that wad it up and really get hurt, you know why they get hurt? Because there's a mechanical failure.
Right, right.
I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
In boats and cars, it never turns out good.
No.
You know? And staying out of other people's accidents.
True, true.
I've been there too.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few over the years that they can't avoid, right?
Yeah.
It just happens right in front of them. All right. Well, we talked a bit about your racing. But I don't know, have you ever gotten a ride in an unlimited hydroplane before?
When we built this boat in 07,
mm-hmm.
Hansen told me, he's like, take it out.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a racer.
Yeah.
Me taking the boat out is a waste of time and equipment. Serves no purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I'm not going to drive it to learn to drive it at the limit, mm-hmm. driving it means nothing. Because driving a vehicle at the limit, it's a whole different vehicle.
Right, right.
And very few people in all these sports are really good enough to drive at that limit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've just never bothered.
Okay.
I kind of, now I look at it, now that I'm pushing 60, it's like, maybe I should have done it. But it just seemed like a Yahoo thing. Oh, the Alberto, taking out the Alberto boat.
Yeah.
It just seemed... The vintage guys
mm-hmm.
hounded me for years, like years. And I finally went to Mahogany and Merlot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did go for a ride
in
the vintage boat.
Which one was that?
The Alberto
drop
sponson boat.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually I ended up giving thumbs down to not go so fast again. Because all I could think about was, you know, two-time championship driver, Alberto, on and on, has tragic accident on Lake Chelan when boat hooks.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I've been around racing. I just like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
That's all I could think about.
Well, unfortunately, there's been several drivers that have passed away in the vintage boats. There was one. Weeks ago,
that's,
right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
that's, I guess so I shouldn't be.
But it,
Yeah.
But it's serious, right? So I'm sure that was going through your mind. That's not how you want that to happen.
Not after, dude. I've been airlifted out. I've been airlifted out of Atlanta Motor Speedway from somebody else's accident.
Yeah.
Unconscious. I've skipped across the water racing outboards. I've had boats drive through my boat, catching 2 inches under the deck and flipping me over and using my boat as a ski ramp rather than driving through me.
Yeah.
I have used up. I don't want to take any chances like that anymore.
Right.
I got no aches, no pains. Yeah. I've barely broken anything.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep it that way. Keep it that way, right?
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, going back to talking about sponsoring hydroplanes over the years, can you think of a highlight or two that you've had in all the years of sponsoring hydroplanes with your father?
Hey, I hope you're all still out there, that I didn't bore you and put you to sleep with my car stories. So, hydros, you're back. You know what's funny? After all the championships, the Gold Cup, the wins, which, I mean, Jim Harvey given the first two victories of ever,
right? Yep.
There's a whole depth of stories that go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the partnership and building the team with Madison and the successes and failures and the Doha moment where we flipped the boat.
Yes.
And Steve blew it over.
Yes. Yeah. And landed right side up.
Landed right side up.
Mm-hmm.
And then being basically out of our first championship and watching it come to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Watching Jeff have his issue and then watching the issue with the motor melting down on Elam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact we got our boat back out. And we didn't have time to charge the batteries. It barely started.
Right.
It was amazing watching the teamwork.
Yeah.
Like, we had military guests that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And they commented on how the boat came in. And the team barely spoke. And my nephew and my son, who never worked on hydro,
mm-hmm.
had worked on the hydro just that weekend.
Yeah.
But had their part, their task.
Okay.
Nobody yelled, nobody screamed, nobody scrambled. They were like ants that just went to it. And the military people were like completely
in awe
at the way the team functioned.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. But if I had to take one thing in racing that to me is the most special thing ever was... I mean, my dad, 5 years ago, he's 92 now, so he was 80-something,
mm-hmm.
was, I talked him into going for a ride in the vintage boat.
Okay.
And I'd suggested before, and he'd be like, no, no, no. Well, this time, I'm like, hey, Dad, if we get you in the boat, we'll get all this media. And my dad's like, oh, I get to promote beef jerky. He lights up, you know? So I kind of suckered him into it, because he doesn't care.
Right? Oh, really?
It's not his thing. It's not his dream to go for a ride.
Okay, okay.
My brother's going, dude, he's too old. He can't do it. And I'm like, look, I'm not afraid of killing him. I'm afraid of breaking him.
Right.
Right? I mean, if he goes out and this is his thing and he doesn't come back, I mean, what better? I mean, he'll, right?
Yeah.
But if he, like, breaks a hip. And he's screaming in pain. This is going to...
Yeah, that's a different story right there.
Right? So that was my mentality, which I maybe shouldn't be honest with. And my brother's like, I'm not coming down. And I'm like... So then I had to think, how do I get my brother Jimmy down? Who's been my racing partner my whole life.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
In cars, boats.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, you know what? If you bring your son Gino down and you come down... It'll be like, just like when they christened the boat Super Salami back in the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he did. He brought his son down.
Oh, awesome.
And my dad would have never gotten drunk. My dad and, or my, anyway, watching my dad come back in.
Yeah.
the smile on his face. I swear he's 15 years younger.
Yeah.
It was the coolest thing, because there's nothing I can do to repay that man.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I've argued with him my whole life, but there's nothing I can do for the life he gave me.
Yeah.
So that, to me, is the most important moment ever.
That's cool. That's really cool. Well, I remember that day because I was standing with a few friends on the shoreline, and they were kind of buzzed about it, that Art was going out on the course, and it was a big deal that day to see that. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, that's a fantastic story.
Almost tearing up.
Yeah, you are, yeah. Well, I remember my father, he helped restore quite a few boats at the museum.
Yeah.
And his dream, he got to live in the early 90s out of Lake Chelan.
Yeah.
He got to drive the Slow Motion 5. He only got to run a lap because there was an oil pressure issue, but he got his lap in the Slow Motion 5. Yeah.
Cool.
And I got a nice photo of him standing on the boat in my house, and I don't think there was a picture, and he had a bigger smile on that day. That was his dream right there. He lived out. So,
isn't that a cool thing to see?
Oh yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, to see how happy they got from that. That was their. I'm sure if he was still around, he would probably say that was one of his happiest moments right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. I'm glad you got to share that with your father and have that experience.
Yeah. Well, it's like, luckily my sister and brother helped out, because I couldn't have got him ready and ran around doing the other stuff.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the team here. We talked about some of the people associated with the team and be helping out in Tri-Cities and Seattle and such. But what are the plans and expectations for the racing team this year? Are they going to be making all the races the rest of the season? Is this more than just a one season deal? What can we see for the future of this team? And what can you tell us, at least?
I can tell you what my intent is.
Yeah.
You know, right. I think I'm kind of the driving force. The company wants a race boat. Mm-hmm. I don't like being a participant. I mean, to sit around and be a participant's great, but it's not my thing.
Right.
Right. Right. So it's how do you put the pieces together to compete? Mm-hmm. I don't got to be the fastest. I just need to be able to honestly compete. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're bringing together this year again, Madison, Hansen's, myself, all the backing Alberto's able to do, and then Charlie Wiggins, and that I think we got a good base. And we're doing it to run the West Coast.
Okay.
Right? So that's solid. And the reason we're running the West Coast is you can't generate enough cash flow and continuity just doing onesie twosies. Mm-hmm. You can't. It's a different mindset of people, right? Mm-hmm. And so luckily and thankfully the Alberto company, Alberto Specialty Meats, get that plug in there.
Yes.
has backed doing this West Coast run.
Oh, fantastic.
Going forward, I'm, like I said, personally, I want to help Charlie Wiggins get that boat built in different ways. Mm-hmm. Because there's, as we talked offline, there's design things I wanted to implement into our boat that was going to be the second boat back in 97. Mm-hmm. Before the boat was wet, we had design changes. And since then, there's things in the race car world that I think I can cross-pollinate with the boat world that will make a safer, more efficient craft. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
And then we got to get through this year. And my goal is to have something wrapped up with Alberto's for next year. To what extent, it's really their call. Mm-hmm. But to do it before the end of the year so that we're committed.
Yeah.
And whether that's a deeper partnership with Wiggins and Madison or whatnot all depends on time, money, and resources.
Yeah.
I don't want to get ahead of myself.
No. We'll well, we want to enjoy the summer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I know the fans love Oberto, and they love seeing the name out there on the water, so hopefully we can see it for more years to come.
Yeah. Well, just, I need everybody to, like, really hit the company hard.
Yes. All right, well, those of you listening, please thank Oberto in any way you can and reach out to him and let him know how many fans they got out there, because I know there's a good number out there.
Follow Oberto Beef Jerky on Twitter, retweet their stuff, tell them you love the Hydros, because they actually, I will say thank you to all the fans out there, because our Facebook, I don't know what they, I'm not a Facebook person, social media.
Yeah.
I'm an analog guy. But whatever the events.
The page.
They have an events section.
They have events, yep.
I was told by the two top people in marketing that the events page had, like, really good traffic.
Yeah.
And it actually had better traffic than some of the Seahawks things they tried.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. So well, keep doing that. And then I'll keep running a faster, more competitive boat.
Yeah. Well, I said on that event page that I was going to that event on last Thursday, and I saw there was many, many hundreds of people that said they were going to be there. So it made me a little nervous to find parking that morning. I made sure I got there early for it. But yeah, so we'll keep it going. Fantastic. Well, talking about the team, I know Jeff Bernard, he's back this year racing for the West Coast. How excited are you for you to bring Jeff Bernard back to the Unlimited class, a very accomplished driver, and to be a part of this Oberto organization?
And Jeff's a great piece to the puzzle, honestly. And after I had lunch with him, you know, because everyone on the short list, there were different people. They would take us, they were not comparable. Everybody has different. Mm-hmm. You know, I can bring this piece to the team and that piece, and where do you make up for this and that? I had lunch with Jeff, and after I had lunch, my mind was made up after speaking with him.
Yeah.
I just felt he not only has a lot of good data points and experience, which to me is important, and the ability to adapt. And he's, I think, older and much more mature, and really looking forward to taking advantage of this opportunity and doing the best we can, you know?
Well, good. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a hard choice. It was hard when we replaced Steve David, too.
Oh, I'm sure.
We had a
short
list for Steve David for 3 years before he finally retired.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because we didn't know. It's like, well, we know at any moment Steve could just go, okay, I'm done.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So every year we'd be going, sorry, Steve, if you're listening. And well, be like, what are we going
to
do?
Yeah. Well, it was, to me, it was like Brett Favre deciding whether he's going to retire or return another year, right? And he was definitely able to. And so
I mean, at one time, all right, Steve, if you're listening, at one time it was the Michael Schumacher thing. They forced him to retire.
Yeah.
There was at one point where I actually asked myself, it's like, do we force Steve to retire or do we? It did. I mean, but those are conversations teams have.
Right.
Right. Yeah. They're the conversations that, you know, Bob Hughes and Mike would have with Steve. Mm-hmm. You know, it's magic when a team's working right.
Oh yeah.
And the more I'm working with Jeff and everything else, the more, I mean, anything can happen. You never know.
Right.
But the more comfortable I am with my choice.
Awesome.
Or our choice. It's not my choice. Let me stand corrected. Totally stand corrected.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to see how the team does and performs for Tri-Cities in Seattle.
Yeah.
I think there's some expectations there, and it'll be fun to see how it plays out.
We have to stay out of other people's problems.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, be clean.
And we know what the driver's capable of. Mm-hmm. We know what the boat's capable of. I, you know, and we're not racing to win. We're racing to maximize our equipment.
Mm-hmm.
In a safe way, bring it home, rough up the water, and push the rest of you into mistakes.
Yeah.
Because you will make errors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Well, we've already seen so far this year. I know J. Michael, there was a kind of a fluke error he made in the final heat and the Gold Cup of the start. And there were some other errors out there, right?
Yeah.
So,
did Jimmy's, man, Jimmy's boat's beautiful.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Jimmy's boat is, I mean, that ride is, it
yeah,
is.
He's got a stellar ride. It's,
Nobody's going to catch it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with
you.
Yeah. It's
his race to lose.
No, it's not. I mean, but it's nice to have a comfortable ride in something mm-hmm. fast.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. But and the other thing I like too is I think there's a really good rapport with Jimmy and Jeff.
Oh, it's good.
You know.
Yeah.
Jeff actually sent out a picture of the swimming pool for his kid's birthday party, mm-hmm. and it's got the Oberto in front of the home street, and he sent it to Jimmy and I, and it's like, Jimmy's not here yet. I'm sure the boats will be repositioned when he shows. You know.
That's fun.
And, you know, Jeff's so serious, but you don't see this wit and humor mm-hmm. that he has, but it's there.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, fun. Good, good. All right. Well, one final question before we leave. On a less serious note, when Hollywood ends up making a movie about the Oberdos and the family and the legacy, which actors are going to play yourself and your father, you think? who do you think will be casted?
I don't know anybody anymore. let's see. Sam Holt. Peter Sellers is dead, and that wouldn't work. Well, since I'm kind of a total nut and a goofball, I don't know how somebody like John Cleese would play me, but I know he'd walk funny. Except for he's way too tall, and I'm really short. Did that give me a short man complex if I pick somebody that tall to play me?
I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess people can write in and...
I can see maybe Jim Carrey taking you on.
Jim Carrey?
On a more serious note. I don't know.
I don't know, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Sylvester Stallone.
There we go.
Don't know. There must be somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody young out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure the fans can make some suggestions on that.
Yeah, make some suggestions. Ping Oberto Racing on Twitter and let me know what you think.
All right. Well, thank you, Larry, for the interview. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and we look forward to seeing the Oberto out there at Tri-Cities, the Columbia Cup, and Seafair.
Yeah.
In San Diego.
We'll be there having fun. And again, thank you to all the fans. No matter what boat you root for, you're involved. And that's, you know, it's the people that make the party.
Oh, yes.
It's not what I do.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the people coming to the party, I'd have no reason to be here. So, and thank Oberto and the Hansons and everybody else.
Well, listeners, I got to make a correction from my last episode. On episode 2, I was talking about the Miss Madison organization, the racing team, some of the memories that a listener had of the organization. And he was talking about the hull in 1988 when they had a brand new boat built by Ron Jones. And I claimed that it was the first boat that was built for the Miss Madison team that was brand new and their first brand new hull to race. But I guess I had my facts wrong. I forgot that in 1976, Miss Madison had a brand new hull that they raced for a year or two before they were able to get the Wing Wonder from the Atlas Van Line racing team, which they went on to run for a decade, over a decade. But Craig Johnson, he was nice enough to let me know that my facts weren't quite up to par on that one. And when he let me know about that, he was a little hesitant to say anything. He didn't want to upset me, but I was actually glad and happy to hear that because that means there's people out there listening to this show. And it means there's other hydroplane buffs and hydroplane geeks out there that know a lot about the sport itself. So Craig Johnson, if you're listening, thank you for letting me know about that. And listeners, if you hear something on my show that you think, hey, David, you didn't quite get that right, please let me know. You can feel free to send me an email, ruchteltalk@gmail.com, or find me on social media. And hey, just let me know. Let me know that I was wrong about that fact, or what the correction would be. And I will gladly correct that on the next episode. Well, I hope you've enjoyed episode 3 of Richard Dell Talk. I have to say it was a lot of fun talking with Larry Roberto. Got to learn a bit more about the Roberto legacy and what's going on in the shop at Home Street Bank. I really appreciate him taking the time to talk with me and to reach out to you, Hydro Plane fans out there. And we've got a fun few weeks coming up ahead of us. A few days away, we've got the Columbia Cup. Week after that, we have Seafair. I have several people lined up to talk with and interview, as well as a couple of other fun ideas I have for the next few episodes. I'm also going to be talking to a couple other people this week, so stay tuned for some updates on what our next episode will be. But make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on your podcast app. By subscribing, you're going to get notifications on any new episodes that are released. But also don't forget, we're on social media. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm going to make sure these next few weeks I'm going to be updating my social media sites for any updates on Hydro news, Hydro gossip, interviews being taken place, as well as just some Hydro Plane fun. So until next time, I hope to see you at the races.